Hello, welcome to the Frontside Podcast, episode 32. I am Charles, a developer-y type person here at the Frontside, and with me are some other folks.
So I am Lydia, and I also work at the Frontside. I am a software engineer here.
And I'm Brandon. I'm also a software engineer at the Frontside. And with us today, we have a special guest, Allison McMillan. Allison, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're working and what you're up to?
Sure. As Brandon said, I am Allison McMillan. I am sort of a newer developer. It was a career transition for me. I work at General Assembly as an engineer, and I work remotely, and I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So yeah, that's kind of, we wanted to bring you on because you and I have had some conversations in the past about working remotely, and you've had some, I would say, unique success at this, ideas that I haven't seen elsewhere yet that I think could totally go viral if you put them on Lifehacker. So I wanted to ask you about those, but before we do, you mentioned that you have a career transition. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about, where you came from, what you were doing before?
Yeah, so I was in nonprofit management, was the managing director of a nonprofit for a number of years, and got an idea for a startup. And so I became our favorite non-technical founder of a startup, and kind of through developing the company, I really wanted to learn about the actual technical side of it. And so I did a Rails Girls workshop, the first Rails Girls workshop that was in Washington, D.C., and expected to hate coding and everything about it and actually loved it. And so at the end of that intro day, I just continued teaching myself, got really involved in the community, established a couple of mentors, and eventually sort of slowly but surely ended up shutting down my failed startup, which is, another story. It was a great experience and learned a lot, but then made the transition into being a developer. And I knew that I was ready for the transition when, my numbers in terms of how many people were using my website weren't going up, and I didn't really care. And all I wanted to do was, add tests to my code.
Well, I mean, now that you have both the technical side and kind of the business side, would you ever consider doing the startup thing again? Or are you pretty much done with that?
Maybe. So I was done with it for a while. And then I actually am having this issue right now. So I'm a new mom. And so I'm pumping. And one of my big issues about working remotely is that I work from home, but I don't always want to have to be home. But the problem is that I can't just go and set up now for a day at a coffee shop or a co-working space because there's no place for me to pump. And so I did a week or so ago get the itch to start up, to do another startup. And I did a Google form survey to find out if this was a problem that other women who work from home were having. And I sat on it for a day or two. And then I was I'm still not quite ready for this. So yes, but not yet.
Right.
And so how did you land your first full-time development job?
So my first-time development job, I've had two positions. One was a full-time contract position, and then General Assembly is actually my first full-time employee at the company job. It was, a lot of getting involved in the community, networking. I did a lightning talk at RubyConf in 2013. So it was a lot of just getting to know people and, continuing to learn and grow and find, a lot of it was also about finding the place that was the right fit for me, a place that, knowing that I was a self-taught newer developer, that I would learn a lot, that I would have a really supportive team and environment to ask a lot of questions and, make some mistakes and really grow as a developer.
And so what is it that what kind of development mostly is that you're doing at GA? And for those of who might not be familiar with what GA does, kind of what it does and what you're doing over there.
Yeah. So GA, I think the tagline is creates thinkers into makers. They basically have a lot of technically focused courses. They do immersives on, you know, user design, user experience, product management, web development, as well as part-time courses, mobile development, and digital marketing. So it's really sort of training in classes that are technical, you know, things that, that people are moving into. My role as an engineer is I work mostly, we have a whole set of Ruby and Rails applications that, that I work on.
So day-to-day, you are doing Ruby on Rails development, just kind of, and so your primary responsibility is just get code shipped, bugs fixed, features shipped, stuff like that. Is that fair to say?
Yep, absolutely.
So Lydia had asked kind of how you got into that. I'm curious in how that relates to remote. Like, how did you decide on a remote job as a relatively new person? And how did you decide that that was, like, how did you basically gamble or know or have an idea that that was going to work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've been working remotely for about 4 years now. One of those was sort of on and off remote, and then three have basically been full-time remote work. So I actually started working remotely when I was at my nonprofit. And at the nonprofit, I was actually responsible for, like, all of the staff. And so we had a couple of employees that worked around the country and a couple that worked in the office. And I actually encouraged everyone to work remotely when they felt it would be beneficial for them. You know, I told them that, like, if they were in the office and they were not getting anything done and they needed a change of scenery, then, like, they should leave. They should leave and they should go somewhere that they feel more inspired, more encouraged, more able to do the work that they are trying to do. And so, you know, I worked on and off remotely at that point, and then you know, I mean, when I was running my startup, I was working remotely all the time because it was, you know, just me. There wasn't, like, a whole team or an office or anything. And, you know, I found that I really liked it. You know, I established a routine. You know, I still follow a schedule. For the last couple of years, like, wake up at the same time every day and have my morning routine that I do. And then I always have a dedicated space that is sort of my office, my working space, which I think is really important. And, you know, so when I was looking for my first position, there are definitely trade-offs to being, especially in your very first developer position, to being remote. And so I was looking at both sort of in-office and remote positions. But, you know, I ended up finding and actually I wanted to find a position that was remote because I feel really effective working from home. You know, I do have a good amount, I feel like, of self-discipline, and I'm able to work on a schedule and focus and, you know, not be doing the laundry or catching up on TV or different things sort of in the middle of the day. And so, you know, that was just a setup that really worked for me. And I also am, like, I chronically run late, so it was great to not have a commute. So
there is the commute. It's just, you know, it's what, about 10 steps.
Right.
But it is kind of, is it important to, like, change, like, when you make that 10 step commute to, you know, kind of change your mentality? It sounds like that's what you do, is kind of put on a different mindset.
Yeah.
Do you do, like, the Mr. Rogers deal of putting a cardigan on and changing your shoes?
Yeah. Is there, like, a ritual?
I get dressed every morning. I know that's not something that everyone does. You know, lots of people sort of work in pajamas or whatever. I find that for me to be successful and, like, put my brain in work mode, I need to, like, get up, get dressed. And, you know, it's really about walking into a different space. So I don't have, you know, like, specific shoes or sweater or whatever that I put on. But I have the space that I work in, and I only work in that space. Like, if I, let's say, after work need to do other stuff on my computer that's not work related, I do not do that from my workspace. Mm-hmm. When I'm in the space, I'm doing work. And when I'm out of the space, I am not doing work, which I feel like also helps me ensure that work time doesn't bleed into family time. which was the case, you know, before baby and after baby.
So that's sort of interesting that because I have a tough time with that when I'm working from home. My kids think that I was better about it when I was full time remote, but my kids feel like that space should be accessible to them. I guess babies don't really know one way or the other, but you like leave that space to do stuff like taking care of your baby and things like that.
I do. And, you know, every once in a while when I need to, I'll have him sort of like in my office space with me. But for the most part, you know, he's not in the space. And actually, that's this sort of the same deal that my husband and I have. So when I started working from home, we went through this phase where he was sort of like, oh, great, you're home. So, you know, the electrician is coming today, or the plumber needs to come, or, you know, whatever. And, you know, like, oh, good, you're home. So you can sort of always be available for those people. And after a couple of weeks of that, I told him that it's really disruptive to my workday when I have to be waiting on, you know, someone to come to the house or to fix stuff or whatever. And so now we take turns. And so even though I'm working from home, if we have to have something fixed or whatever, like sometimes he'll stay home and wait for the repair person. And he knows also that when I'm in my workspace, it's a little easier now because we have a house. When we had like a one bedroom apartment, he also knew that when I was in my workspace, like I was still working, and that was not time to like bother me or ask questions or whatever, that he should pretend like I'm not at home. And when I come out of that space, that's when it's time to, you know, that's when that time starts. And I'm hoping, with my son, I'm hoping that because he sort of sees me go up the stairs to the office every day and come down at the end of the day, I'm hoping that for him, and obviously I have no idea how this will actually work out, but for him, it'll be just like mommy's going to an office, mommy's home from the office. The office just happens to also be in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just, yeah, there really is a commute happening there.
So I'm curious, when this like General Assembly role came up, were you the one that kind of convinced them to let you work remotely, or was the role originally designed as a remote position? And kind of what was that like conversation like to convince them that that was like the best situation for you to be productive for them?
Yeah. So, at General Assembly, actually the position was always remote. So the way that the engineering team works at GA is, if you're in New York, then if you're based in New York, if you live in New York, then you can work from the office, and you work from the office in New York. But, the rest of the team works from wherever we happen to live around the world. And I think right now we're about 50%, like half of the team works in New York and half of the team works remotely. At my previous full-time contract position that I was on, I was the only remote developer. So that was sort of a different situation. But for at GA, they sort of have a remote culture in place, and half the team works remotely and half the team works from the office.
So what does that remote culture look like?
So it's great. I mean, you know, we have Slack. So we use the general tools that you always hear about, right? Hangouts, Slack, you know, PRs, GitHub, asynchronous communication, all of that sort of good stuff. We, you know, a Trello board for project management. We also have sort of fun social stuff in place. So we have a remote hangout once a week, which is basically like our weekly water cooler time. You know, we do sort of a remote, we learned about this from, I think Zapier did it first. They have Conspiracy Santa, which is sort of like a Secret Santa, but different. And you can do it with everyone remote. So we did that last year, which was a lot of fun. And every quarter, once a quarter, GA brings all of the engineers to New York for a week. For a week of like in-person meetings and hanging out and, you know, getting to know each other as people so that we can work really effectively as colleagues when we're not face-to-face.
So you mentioned a second ago that there are things that are sort of like well-known and widely talked about, and they generally have to do with like online tooling that's asynchronous. And then a lot of stuff that only comes up through experience. Like knowing, hey, we have to get our people together once a week. I'm curious to know what other sort of non-obvious things crop up through experience working remotely, like people, you know, when you try to hold a meeting with people and what that experience is like for a blended remote and local team, and how you kind of look out for some of the pitfalls that happen there.
Yeah, I was going to say meetings are probably the biggest one. You don't realize how awful an in-person meeting is as a remote person until you're remote and you're like, oh my God, how do you people deal with this? It's just like, I feel like when you're in an office, you're always like, oh, yay, people on look, and you see their faces on the video. Everything's so great. And then you like sometimes watch as the faces disappear as people turn off their video cameras. And you're like not really sure why. And then you go remote for, you know, the day or the meeting or whatever because you're traveling. And you're like, holy crap, this is such an awful experience. I want to turn off my camera because I'm not even really paying attention. So meetings are a big one. I would say it is amazing how much difference like a good microphone and a good camera make, like actually being able to see everyone instead of one person having Hangouts open on their laptop and you see like their one face and you can hear them, but you can't really hear like the other person that's across the table because they're not facing the microphone. So a good camera and a good microphone make a huge difference. A lot of the stuff that you miss that gets like, it's not a big deal, but it's just sort of annoying when you have a bunch of people in person and then a handful of people remote are like the jokes and the little things that are sort of mentioned because people don't say them in a very clear enunciated way. They just sort of like mention it under their breath and then you hear a bunch of laughter and you're like, wait, what just, I want to know the joke. What just happened? So we actually often for meetings where it's really important that everyone hear everything. So not for like the daily check-in, but for like the more important meetings, we will often have everyone on the engineering team all on their own individual laptops from their desk or from wherever. So we won't do like a group of people in a room and then people, you know, remote. Everybody, essentially everybody is remote. And that's sort of like a really good equalizer because everybody's communicating through the same medium and, you know, really able to hear each other, see each other, et cetera. So those are two big things. The other thing that I would say, and this is sort of more of like, I guess a social thing is, you know, it sucks when you're remote and there's like a big meeting and there's like some awesome like lunch or snack or dessert or something at that meeting and everybody's talking about it. And you're like sitting at your desk at home, like wondering what you maybe have in the fridge downstairs.
Like, right.
I'll just have these dried out carrot sticks.
Yeah, or like, crap, it sometimes reminds you that you like need to go supermarket shopping. And so being able to offer that to remote employees is really important. So at GA, for example, there's a product team meeting, which is it's a rather large meeting. And there are about 50 people in person in New York together. And then there are, you know, 10 to 15 of us, let's say remotely, remoting in. And there's always lunch at that. And so what they've offered is that for those meetings, remote employees can order lunch, or can get lunch, you know, that we can expense. And you can get lunch, whatever it is, like there's no price range because some folks live in areas where they have lots of places that deliver right around them. And some folks live in areas that are a little more off the beaten path. And so they have to order, let's say, a whole pizza because that's the only thing that will deliver near them. But it's really nice that you can sort of like eat your fancy special delivered lunch too while everybody else in the office is eating their, you know, yummy free lunch as well.
Man, that is fantastic. What strikes me is it seems, when I hear it, it seems so obvious, and yet I never would have never would have thought that, right? It makes so much sense. Yeah. Like, do you guys, is there like a reflective process to kind of like, whose job is it? I mean, I guess it's everybody's job at some point, but like, is there like some formal process of kind of analyzing how remote work happens and like kind of augment, you know, changing it, you know, to introduce things like that?
You know, there isn't a formal process. Oftentimes, you know, on Slack or like, we find that when one of us is frustrated about something, many of us are frustrated about the same thing. And so, you know, one thing that I love about GA is that they are definitely open to people taking initiative and making suggestions. So, you know, if you're not just like complaining, if you're not just saying like, oh, this sucks, but you're saying like, this sucks, maybe we can try this. They're often very open to trying that out. And so, you know, we'll sort of brainstorm, amongst ourselves, like what's working, what's not, what sort of like feels crappy, what feels great, in terms of culture, and then try to put initiatives in place to help that. So about a year ago, for example, we have our DevFest, which is our quarterly gathering of all the engineers in New York. And about a year ago, we sort of re-examined what that looks like. And, you know, if people are enjoying it, not enjoying it, how many days it should be, how much work it should be versus how much social, you know, what we found was, so one big thing that came out of that was that DevFest used to be Monday through Friday. So folks would fly in on Sunday and fly out on Saturday. And we found that for people with families or pets, or things like that, being away that whole week was really difficult for them. And so that was something we changed. So now DevFest is Tuesday through Thursday. And so folks can fly in. They can still fly in on Sunday if they want that extra day to hang out and fly out on Saturday. But, you know, if they want to, they can just come in Monday evening and leave Friday morning, which is a lot easier if you have, you know, family or pets or, you know, other responsibilities that you need to take care of as well. And so, you know, we're always like iterating on the process and figuring out what's working and what's not working.
I was actually totally about to ask you about whether or not they bring you guys to the office at any point. Is it just for those like quarterly meetings, or are there smaller, are there other opportunities for people to actually come in and meet in person throughout the year?
You know, it's always for just those opportunities. You know, if you happen to be in New York or be in a, you know, in a location that any other developer is in, you know, it's always fun to sort of get together with folks. So, I know last year I happened to be in Seattle for Thanksgiving, and the developer works out of Seattle. And so we met up and worked from a coffee shop for a day. You know, and so that's always encouraged. But in terms of bringing everyone together, it's usually just for those big quarterly get-togethers.
I'm curious to know, you know, you said that you had actually quite a bit of experience doing remote work, you know, in kind of your previous life before you were a developer. Is obviously the tools have changed a little bit there. And I'm kind of curious, is there anything that makes it unique, like about, you know, the particular job of being a developer, like what challenges and what solutions are kind of unique? And I guess the converse thing that I'm curious about is like, what then is universal, you know, that really doesn't have anything to do with development per se?
So there are two things that I think are really unique. First, the amount of like screen sharing that has to happen. So, you know, things like Screen Hero, we use Screen Hero a lot, but there are always different tools that are coming out in terms of screen sharing. I would say that's a big one. That is, you know, really, I don't have to share my screen in like the nonprofit world. Like nobody has to type on my computer for anything. So, you know, I think that's one big one in terms of a tool-based thing. The other thing about being a developer is that I guess it's sort of imposter syndrome, or, you know, me being new to the industry when I started as a remote employee. I think that was the biggest thing, right? Because when you are not in person, when you can't see everyone around you, You don't know if they're busy. You don't know if they're like have been working on a card and they're really frustrated with it and you're asking them a question at like peak frustration time, or you know, if they're just zoning out and it's a good time to ask them a question or to be like, oh, hey, are you working on anything? Can we pair? And so when you can't see folks around you and even getting feedback, right? A lot of your feedback, instead of coming in person, comes just over, you know, PRs and whatnot. And so therefore, you sort of have to think about tone, both when you're writing feedback and when you're receiving feedback. And so I think that was something that was really challenging for me. I mean, I, like, the first couple of days on the job was like terrified to ask questions because, you know, sort of classic imposter syndrome. I was like, oh my God, they hired me and they thought I could do all of this. And actually I can't do any of it. And I'm just sitting at home in front of my computer and nobody can see me. And like, I have no idea and they have no idea and what's going on. And so after the first week, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm not getting anything done because I'm too afraid to ask questions. I've never been afraid to ask questions ever in my life. I just have to force myself to ask questions. And so I actually made it a goal that I would ask 100 questions every week. And you know, I didn't count the number of questions that I asked, but the important part was that it stayed central in my mind that I should always be asking questions. And what I learned was that, you know, asking questions is great. And sometimes people answer right away. And sometimes they answer a little bit later. Or sometimes they'll be like, oh, hey, just saw this. Do you, you know, do you still need help? Do you still need an answer to this question? But that, for me, especially at the beginning, was really challenging. The other thing that was challenging was pairing, right? So when you're not face-to-face, sometimes being like face-to-face with somebody while pairing can be really helpful, especially when, you know, like somebody just wants to start typing or when you start Googling stuff via Stack Overflow. Like if you're pairing remotely, you can't see what the other person is Googling and what articles they're reading. And so you really have to push yourself and the other person to say like, okay, talk out loud to me, like, what are you Googling? You know, Slack me the link that you're reading right now so that I can sort of skim it as well. And I actually started, I started doing pairing retros. So a couple of hours after I would pair with someone, especially somebody that I knew that I would be pairing with frequently, we would do like a 5-minute retro, which was just basically like, okay, what do we think went well about pairing? And what do we think we can improve upon for the next time that we pair? And I found that to be, like, really, really helpful.
I'm pretty fascinated by how just having all of these different chat and communication applications has, like, completely made this a viable option for a lot of companies where it wouldn't have been before. At my last job, I actually worked with a team of developers that was half deaf. And so we were forced to use chat even in the office. And we didn't have any remote workers at the beginning, like when I first started working there. But because we had had to adapt and develop all of these means of communication over chat, where we kind of, for instance, our stand-up would be on chat. And we actually ended up deciding that that was a really effective way to have stand-up because you could go back and reference what you committed to and what other people were working on. And all of our sort of chatter throughout the day, so all of those jokes that you're talking about missing in meetings and things like that, all of that ended up happening entirely in chat for us. So our deaf developers and our hearing developers got to participate in like everything equally. And that actually allowed us to add a remote worker and have him kind of really in a streamlined way join into what we were working on. And, you know, after he had been part of our team for 3 weeks or so, we sort of stopped even remembering that he wasn't physically in our office because none of us were standing there having, you know, kind of those side chats that you end up with at whiteboards and things like that. That's not the culture that we ended up with because we actually couldn't have a lot of those conversations because we didn't actually all know ASL. And it was really interesting to see how important building kind of all of these different communication protocols like with our chat system was to making that work in the office and how it supported like the remote team. And it sounds like you guys have something similar where you you know, you kind of send out a question and someone sees that you pinged them, but it's not like email where it gets buried under everything else. I love that chat is kind of this thing that you can come back to and see like the very last thing that came up, or you can go back and see the entire, you know, conversation that happened. And if your meetings take place over chat, everybody kind of gets to participate equally. I don't know. I just think it's, I feel like Slack and HipChat and those tools are some of the main tools that are making remote work easier for people to implement in their own businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, our folks that are in New York, they don't like have a bunch of conversations between them in New York. Like all the conversations that they have with each other are also over Slack, and it allows them to, you know, work from home whenever they want as well. And I would say that, you know, I think the other part of the question was what's like universal between, you know, being a developer and not being a developer, and pushing your team towards doing all the communication over chat or doing communication virtually. I think that that is universal in terms of like when you don't have remote employees and you're trying to establish that remote culture, nudging everyone in that direction can be really difficult because you want to like make the jokes in the office and you don't understand, I think, how it can translate to be that you can be just as close with your colleagues, even though you're not with them in person every day. But if you sort of move your team in the right direction, encourage people, even those who come to the office every day, to work remotely every once in a while, you know, once a week, twice a week, whatever, then you move your entire team and your entire company's culture towards that, regardless of what industry you're in.
Plus, there aren't any animated GIFs in face-to-face conversations.
Right.
I don't know. There's a startup idea.
Hold on. I'm looking up a reaction GIF for this. So one of the questions that I have, and I think a lot of this has been answered just through the course of this conversation, but it's about the fact that coming in, I've heard and actually repeated the advice to people that, hey, if you're relatively junior, remote may not be for you. And you were the first person I talked to that said, no, I've been successful at it. And I'm wondering if there's anything else in the style of collaboration or in the style of workflow that makes remote work more accessible for newer developers that wouldn't call themselves senior developers yet.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that if you are a junior developer who's looking for a remote position, like you have to know yourself really, really well. And you have to have a very supportive team, right? So you have to know that you can be really disciplined. You need to know that you can work from home, that you can work on a schedule, that you are not going to be, that you're not going to hold yourself back by not asking questions. You really have to sort of like throw yourself out there and be okay with throwing yourself out there. You know, I think that as a developer, you really sort of have to know yourself. Yeah. So, you know, you need to know that you can stick to a schedule, that you can really put yourself out there, and you need a team that also understands that you will be asking a lot of questions, that, you'll want a pair, that they are also willing to go the extra mile to make you feel more comfortable asking questions, pairing, you know, that they want you to be successful as well.
So it's not a huge, huge tweak on good remote culture. Good remote culture by default, if done well, is pretty supportive to new people. It's just not something that we talk or think about a lot.
Right. And I think the fear is that new people, you know, sort of when left to their own devices, won't have enough direction, you know, or won't be able to focus, or might even sort of give up too easily and find it too difficult to be on their own. And I think that, you know, if a person is okay with asking questions and, you know, saying like, I need to pair today, I have to pair, you know, and there are times when in stand, I'll say, you know, like, I need to pair in this card. And if I don't hear from anyone within a half hour, I will then, you know, ping the channel and say, hey guys, still got a pair on this card. You know, I'm definitely blocked on this until somebody can pair with me, you know. But I think that as a new junior developer, a lot of folks will just sort of sit in their house and be like, oh, nobody's gotten back to me. Maybe they're all busy. Maybe nobody wants to code with me because I'm just not good enough and they find it annoying to pair with me. It's really easy to get into your head. And so it's important to push yourself out of your head and give yourself, I don't know, for a little while I had like little like positive affirmations on post-its around my computer, like, make sure you ask questions today, or like, you're not bothering anyone, don't worry. So
that's awesome. Like that. Is that something you send in like a care package to new employees? Like a stack of post-it notes with happy affirmations on them?
We do not, but that is actually a great idea.
Well, because I know you do send care packages out to new remote employees, right? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so GA sends for any new employee, whether they're in the office or not, they have sort of this new employee swag that goes to everyone. And you know, I'll be honest, like some of it is thought through for remote employees, some of it is not great. Like for example, one thing that they have is on your first day, a welcome like hello there balloon is tied to your chair so that other people also know it's your first day and they can sort of come up and say hi to you. Now, like, you know, no one's going to come into my house and hang a balloon on my chair, right? So that is like not so effective for remote employees. But, you know, everything else that we get are the same things that every new employee at GA gets.
Okay, so I had one other question. And it is about something in a prior conversation you and I had, you had said something about remote employees tend to hold themselves or get held. It's important for an organization not to hold remote employees to a higher standard. And I definitely had that experience as a remote employee where I felt like every minute of every day must be spent being productive and writing code and getting things shipped. Whereas when you're in an office environment, you have lots of these little side-off conversations and your attention is stolen. And so one of the advantages of remote work is that you can focus more, but the disadvantage is that you feel pressured to focus all the time. How do you wind up dealing with that and find and make peace with that and manage that in an organization?
Yeah, this is like a great topic. And it's actually funny. The engineering team who is remote did a presentation for GA's office, GA's New York office, a couple months ago about what it's like to be a remote employee. And somebody during the like Q&A time, somebody raised their hand and said, okay, so besides being less productive, what are some of the disadvantages of working from home? And we all looked at each other and we were like, we have no idea how you all get actual work done in an office. But so for a long time, I put a lot of pressure on myself to be super productive to, you know, and if I like had a day that wasn't really productive or, you know, took a little longer for lunch or whatever, I felt really bad about it. And what I realized was there were days when I worked in an office that I would spend a little extra time on Facebook, that I would, you know, spend a little extra time on Twitter or, you know, make a couple of personal phone calls or have, you know, more sort of side conversations. And so it was important for me to allow myself that ability at home as well, right? As long as you're not sort of getting sucked into, let's say, like watching a movie at 2 p.m, or... you know, I know a lot of people think that working remote is really difficult because, like, isn't there so much stuff around the house that you want to get done that you would just be doing, right? Like, how are you not just, like, making dinner and doing laundry and straightening up and doing all of those sort of things all day long? You know, if there's a day here and there where you, like, watch a little extra TV or, like, you know, take a little bit longer of a lunch break to, like, let's say start dinner or whatever it is, that's okay. And, you know, those happen in the office as well. And so, you know, companies and individuals shouldn't sort of hold themselves to this ridiculous standard of being able to be productive every second of every day just because you're working from home. Now, if you find yourself like doing other stuff all the time, then you might have to like re-examine whether actually working from home is effective for you. Because for a lot of people, like, working for home from home just isn't, they just don't like doing it. I mean, my husband also has a fairly flexible job. He works from home every once in a while. But, you know, by the end of the day, when he works from home, he is stir crazy and he, like, has to leave. He could not work from home for more than, like, 2 days at a time. So it's also not for everyone, which is important to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like some of the themes that kind of came out of this for me. One of them is being thought of, you know, that remote being people that are remote are because they are not physically present, they are often not thought of. So you kind of put them out of mind. And even though it's not for everyone, it's kind of the group of people that gets forgotten about more frequently when you're trying to do this. And it's and it requires that effort. And that's the thing that a lot of people are intimidated out of signing up for. And it's something that we think about and we try to like move toward. We've made a deliberate effort and we've talked about it literally for 2 years. We've made a deliberate effort to try to move toward behaviors that will allow us to do this. But it may be time, I'm starting to realize, like with some of the stuff that you've been talking about, I think it may be time for companies like ours, companies that are traditionally co-located, to at least experiment with the idea of letting your current group of people work external to the office and report back on, hey, this is really frustrating. So the act of having those retrospectives, as you talked about earlier, is sounds really vital.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, you know, working from home is great. I'll just sort of throw in there that, you know, like I said, I'm a new mom and I'm currently pumping, and like there are women who have to pump in just awful places and awful circumstances because their offices don't have the right accommodations for them. And, you know, when I was pregnant, man, I actually went over 40 weeks. And once I hit that, I was like, if I had to commute to an office right now, I would just be one very, very angry pregnant lady. So, you know, I mean, besides like, you know, lack of commute and flexibility and the other stuff that's great of working from home, I will say that particularly as a woman who has recently been pregnant and had a baby, that there were even more benefits than I had before, I felt like.
That's really cool. Well, thank you for sharing your experiences and your story with us. And I'd like to know if you have anything, you know, any way that you, I know that you have a full-time job and everything, and you've kind of kicked around ideas for side things, but have you considered helping companies transition to remote culture or improve their remote culture and help you know, impart some of your knowledge more directly? Is that something you're thinking about doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I do a little bit of consulting work, and we'll be doing consulting work on, you know, how to onboard or effectively look for remote junior developers, or, you know, things to add or to help your company establish in order to have an effective remote team. And so, you know, I am pingable via Twitter and whatnot if anyone wants more information about that.
All right. And we'll put a link in the show notes to how to get a hold of you on Twitter. But just if somebody wants to manually type it while listening to the podcast, what's your Twitter handle?
It's at @Ally_P. So it's @Ally_P.
Awesome. Well, do expect a call from us about that. I actually would really like to talk to you about it. And I wanted to thank you again. It's we could have a whole separate parent cast about being a software developer and dealing with kids.
Yeah, seriously.
That would be fun to do sometime. We'd love to, you are welcome anytime that you can cut an hour out of your life to come chat with us. So, and I can't wait to hear more from you about this stuff, because I feel like there's a ton more to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was great. It was a lot of fun talking to you guys about my experience and what I found has been effective and not so effective about working remotely.
Well, thanks again, Ally, and thanks for everybody for listening here from the front side. If you ever have any questions, hit us up on Twitter at the front side, and we'll see you all next time.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.